We are Vineyard.
Somos Viña.
We are Vineyard.
Now, I am not a pop culture guru. There are an embarrassing number of movies I've never seen that are like, everyone's seen that movie, but I haven't because I was reading books and writing books instead. And part of what I've had to do is decide this, like staying up with pop culture is not my personal calling. Mm-hmm. And students don't care if I know all the lingo or the examples from the movies they watch. What they care is if I love them and show interest in their life. Mm-hmm. So I'm just going to go ahead and be the nerdy version of myself and not let that disqualify me from relationship. Because somebody told me along the way, they don't need you to be cool. They want you to be authentic.
Welcome to the We Are Vineyard podcast, conversations to help us grow with Jesus and each other. On today's episode, Jay talks with returning guest Carmen Imes, who's an author and the associate professor of Old Testament at Biola University. Let's listen in.
Here we are again. We get to hang out.
Here we are, and we're matching. Without any memo.
I didn't even think about that. Well, and we were just talking about how weird it is that we literally just saw each other.
In person.
Yeah. We were at Jubilee, CCO's big event. I was the warm-up band. You were the main.
No. You told us all about sin. And I told us all about what God does to redeem us out of that, or
redemption, restore things. But they chose their speakers wisely, because I think I'm probably fully qualified to talk about sin, and conversely redemption. But
it was fun to be a team. I just loved hearing your testimony about how the Lord got a hold of your life, and I never get tired of hearing people's stories, because it's such a miracle the way it happens a little bit differently for every one of us. Mm-hmm. And there's no formula. And I just love the way the Holy Spirit surprises us.
Totally. No, it was great. It was a great group. It was a great room. Mm-hmm. So much energy. Gosh.
Way more energy than I have at this age.
Oh, man. I've gotten so old. Yeah. But it was just great. It was great to be there. And then we get to talk again. And because, speaking of stories, the last time we talked for our podcast, you got to lay out your whole story. We'll stick that in the show notes for anybody who didn't get a chance to hear your story. Got to figure out you're actually conversant in this place called Denver, Colorado, which I really love.
And in this thing, like charismatic theology and worship. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah, that was the most autobiographical podcast I've ever done, I think. And it was kind of fun to see how all the pieces fit together. This is what I have become convinced of, Jay. God does not waste a minute of our stories.
Yeah.
And I've been on a journey this past month, even just in the past 2 weeks, that has totally convinced me that the parts of my life that I thought might have been a mistake or an oops, God was doing, God has redeemed those thoroughly. And I'm just in awe again of how, you know, we might think I'm going down this road because of this. We might have a vision of where we think our life is going, and God has surprises in store, but there are surprises to us, not to him.
It's true. Yeah. Well, and there doesn't seem to be an end to the surprises, does there?
No, it is just honestly so beautiful, because I've been telling students for a while that I thought I was called to full-time missions. Mm-hmm. And then I've ended up in the academic world. But this month, the world of missions has broken open for me again in a way that I didn't see coming. And so now I'm saying, okay, Lord, was that actually truer than I realized? And like, what does it look like to faithfully respond to these new invitations? Mm. It's really fun to see God surprise us.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
That's cool. Well, let's dive into that a little bit, because we were talking right before we started recording, so much of how we're trying to think right now as a whole movement of pastors is, how do we think about another generation? You know, we've all heard the little stories or read the articles on the Fight Revival and the different ways that Gen Zers are thinking about faith. And in our local church, we've experienced that. I know different people across the movement have seen a lot of younger folks just walking into church in a way that didn't happen when I was a Gen Xer, or, you know, it's a different day.
Yep.
And yet you are operating within a context of a teaching environment with folks that are learning and growing. But talk a little bit about, like, what's it like interacting with students? There's different kinds of teachers that they're there for the material. Like, I'm here to deposit good thoughts in your head. My experience of you, and even watching you communicate this week, is you have a real heart for a generation and the way these different folks are thinking. Talk a little bit about how you think about your vocation.
No, I don't know if we have any faculty at Talbot. So I'm at Biola University in our Talbot School of Theology, where I teach mostly undergrads, but a few grad students as well. I don't know if we have any faculty here who are just mostly interested in conveying information. Like, I really see that heart among all my colleagues. And for me, the whole attraction to becoming a professor was based on what my professors did for me, which was namely spend hours with me, helping me decide how to be faithful to God's call on my life, who I should marry, like, what, you know, what classes I should take, where, how should I think about vocation? It was not like I was in their office trying to get, maybe I did this too, trying to get points on a test back. I'm sure I did that because I was like interested in good grades, but I remember the hours spent trying to figure out, like, if God has called me to be a missionary and I'm interested in this guy and he doesn't sense a calling to be a missionary, but he's like open, would it be okay to date him or is it not okay? Like, those were the kinds of questions I was wrestling with. And I would not be who I am today without the investment of my professors. And that's what first attracted me in this direction. I love conveying information in the classroom. That is super fun too. And I love seeing the light bulbs go on. But I'm also aware that having your brain tickled with cool information does not produce lasting change if it's outside the context of a relational connection.
Yeah.
And I can't provide that for every single student on a deep level, but I'm trying to connect with students who are hungry. So I do this thing called Coffee with Carmen.
Yeah, we were just talking about that.
This was my attempt to be a little more accessible. I have a lot of students. This semester I have 308 students.
Wow.
So I can't have office hours with every one of them, nor would all of them sign up for office hours because some of them are too intimidated. They wouldn't want to come into a building and, you know, sit in my office surrounded by books. It would be intimidating. So I thought, what if I go to our coffee shop on campus, sit outside in the sunshine, California sunshine, and have students just come and gather around, and then there's less pressure on any one of them to, like, have a personal conversation with me, but they can listen in as other people are asking questions. So today we had a record 16 students show up, and it was raining today, which almost never happens here. So we had to go inside the library and push some tables together, and we had this growing circle around the tables, and they're just asking the best questions. About how does God work? You know, like, they're asking a question about Genesis, but the question is really about divine sovereignty and human free will. You know, they're asking a question about Exodus, but it's really about election.
Yeah.
And what does that mean for missions? Or what there's just all these really good questions. And then to be able to respond to those questions in a way that is embodied. Like, for me, theology is not abstract. It takes shape in real relationships and real situations. So to throw in a story to show how it works out in practice, to answer their question of, well, why did you come to this conclusion? You know, because sometimes I'm presenting an idea that one of their other professors would not agree with. And so, like, how did you come to this conclusion? What changed your mind? You know, so today, as we talked about divine sovereignty and human free will, I said, well, I used to be a Calvinist and I'm not a Calvinist anymore. And here's how I made that shift. And it's fascinating to kind of see them wrestle in real time with what they believe and how to make sense of the scriptures.
Yeah.
And knowing that this also is really underneath it is the question about who should I date or what should my major be? Or, you know, like, it's these vocational kinds of questions that are animating their theological questions.
So, you know, I find a lot of folks that are my age. I don't know how old you are, and I would not presume to guess. But
I was born the year that Jubilee started.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there you go. 1977. That was my year. And so it was so fun to speak at the Jubilee of Jubilees and realize, yeah, oh, this year I'm starting my Jubilee year. Like, I'll turn 49 this summer, which means I will begin my 50th year. What will it look like,
yes,
to think about Jubilee in my 50th year?
Well, I'm way older and wiser. I turned 50 in August, I'm so much older and wiser than
excellent
you.
Excellent. Teach me.
But what I was thinking about, it, what I'm aware of for people my age or older, maybe even younger, is the level of intimidation they feel with younger students, or the younger folks, like people in college, feel intimidated of them. So you just described, I was aware they wouldn't want to be in my office surrounded by books. So I'm just going to go to the coffee shop. It's an open-ended thing.
Mm-hmm. They can come and go.
Yeah.
They have a chair. They don't have to.
You're already lowering the barrier. Mm-hmm. But have you ever did you ever have to overcome a hurdle like, gosh, how do I get into their lives?
Yeah. So I was really worried about this because I started my PhD later in life. I finished the PhD at 39. And I was feeling like, okay, I'm aging out. Like, I'm going to be so much older than my students by the time I actually start doing this thing. How will I possibly connect with them? And then a very wise professor of mine said, Carmen, you have children. And your children, by the time you start teaching, your children will almost be the age of your students, which means you will actually know exactly what shows they watched when they were kids. So it might be harder for me going forward, but right now I have three kids, but my younger two kids are a freshman and sophomore at Biola. My students are literally my kids now. And I'm like, oh yes, I know what you watched. I know what you were reading. Some of the controversies. Now, I am not a pop culture guru. There are an embarrassing number of movies I've never seen that are like, everyone's seen that movie, but I haven't because I was reading books and writing books instead. And part of what I've had to do is decide this, like, staying up with pop culture is not my personal calling. Mm. And students don't care if I know all the lingo or the examples from the movies they watch. What they care is if I love them and show interest in their life. Mm. So I'm just going to go ahead and be the nerdy version of myself and not let that disqualify me from relationship, because somebody told me along the way, they don't need you to be cool. They want you to be authentic. Mm. So there are ways that I connect with students. So for example, I teach a big Old Testament survey class where we do the whole Old Testament in one semester. It is good fun. I love it. Mm. And every day as they're walking into class, I'm playing a movie score that has some connection to what we're going to talk about. So, I'm trying to think of which one is coming up next. On Thursday of this week, we'll be studying Judges. So I'll be playing Pirates of the Caribbean.
Oh,
because
good.
Like, it's like anything goes. Have I seen Pirates of the Caribbean?
No.
No, I have not. Huh. I have gone on the ride at Disney, but I've actually not seen the movie, but I don't need to have seen the movie. Like, just the basic idea of anarchy kind of works for the time of the Judges. Yeah. And students love it because they walk in the room and they're like, oh, and they're like trying to name that tune and trying to see, why is she playing this one today? How does that connect with the Old Testament? So they're having all the fireworks in their heads. I don't need to actually know
that's
all the things.
Great.
So that's one thing that I do to connect with them in terms of culture. And that's it doesn't even require me to be an expert.
I was thinking you would play something from like the Wild West.
Oh yeah, that works too. Yep, that works too. But I've got all the things like planned out in a Spotify playlist. So, you know, when we're in Esther, I'm playing like Prince of Persia, something. Yeah. You know, so we got Persian sounding music.
Okay.
So it is a lot of fun.
That's
and
it's so good.
David and Goliath Day, I'm playing Rocky. I haven't seen Rocky, but like, I think there's probably.
You've not even seen Rocky?
I haven't. It's bad. Man. It's really bad, Jay.
I love it. Okay. So you're saying a few keys there that are really important. I don't have to be cool, which is, I think, what everybody thinks.
Yeah.
Man, I don't know how to relate. I'm not going to wear the right clothes. I don't know the jokes. I've not heard the right band. So do I have to somehow get a TikTok account and start making TikToks or something? And you're like, no, I certainly don't.
Yeah.
But I can be authentically myself.
Yeah.
Engaged in their life and try to make some bridges, try to do something that enables them.
And that bridge to me is, and this is something you do so well. To me, the bridge is opening up my life to them and inviting them to open their lives to me. So to tell real stories. So this week in class, so we were talking about how Moses didn't get to go in the promised land, and they were studying the chapter in Numbers that explains where he gets disqualified. And we're talking about like why. And I said, you know, when I was a kid, I actually thought that that meant Moses wouldn't go to heaven when he died, because in my, everything was super spiritual in my brain. And so, so I'm thinking, if you don't get to go to the promised land, then you don't get to go to heaven. And that seemed terribly unfair to me. So I prayed very fervently for God to change his mind about Moses and let him into heaven. And then I remembered, I even prayed for Satan. I prayed that God would save Satan, that Satan would repent. This was something. And as I said that, people were like nodding their heads. I was like, wait. Did other people pray for Satan? And all these hands went up of kids, like these Christian kids who grew up thinking, oh, that's so sad that Satan is going to go to hell or spend eternity in hell. I think he should be reconciled to God. Let me pray for him. Wow. And it was just this moment of connection where we're like so thinking about our childhood faith and kind of how we're processing and connecting. So I find that students are captivated by stories, by the story of like how I thought about the Bible or how I encountered God or how I made a decision or how I was discouraged. And if weaving that into your teaching actually makes the whole thing relatable.
Yeah. You have a key professor or teacher that you think about, because you said I was so shaped by my teachers and professors. Do you have like one or two that you're like, wow, they made such an impact on me?
Yeah.
I think the way that they think. Is there anyone in
particular? Yeah. So interesting that you should ask, because my top two professors from my undergrad experience both passed away in the past year. So one died in June. His name is Carl Kutz. I was his TA. I was his very first class of students. He started my sophomore year just fresh out of his PhD program. Actually, I think he had gone from the PhD program to church ministry and then the teaching job. So it wasn't fresh out of it, but like new in the classroom. And I recall that there was a really formative time in the classroom. And this I think is really instructive for pastors too. He came in and he taught us, he was teaching us on the Song of Songs, which is fraught, right? It's already going to be like kind of embarrassing. It's already going to be kind of challenging. And I don't remember what his view was, whether he was teaching it as an allegory or as a historical, like this is an actual relationship between a man and a woman who are in love with each other. I can't remember which of the views, but I remember raising my hand and asking a lot of questions that day. And my friend was next to me. She was asking a lot of questions too. Like not out of, I hope it wasn't out of arrogance. I remember just trying to be like, this doesn't make sense to me. What you're saying like doesn't account for all the data. Like, well, but what about this? And what about this? And we're like trying to figure it out. And he goes, you know what? I need to think more about this. Let's move on. So we moved on. The next day he comes to class with new handouts and he says, so last class I taught you this view, but some of you asked some really good questions. And so I went home and studied again and I flipped my view. And so now I'm going to teach you the other view.
Wow.
And he was willing to be teachable and willing to be shaped even by our reading of the text. And I think that really modeled for me, I don't have to have all the answers.
Yeah.
I'm a fellow traveler or a guide, and we're figuring this out together. So I have a class now where I have beside me here a library cart full of books, and I bring it with me to class. It's a Bible backgrounds class, and students ask questions, and I'll be like, I don't know. Let's find out. And I hand out books and we all research and figure out the answer, because like, it isn't about me knowing all the things so that I can teach you the things. It's about us learning to seek out the truth together So that was really formative and I think helped me relax about having to have it all together.
Yeah. Oh, that's really good. And you're right. That relates one-to-one with being a pastor.
And actually, I can trace that all the way back to my childhood. And I don't know if I told you this story when we did the other talk, but when I was 8 years old, I was sitting in church looking through the Bible because we weren't allowed to, we didn't have children's church. We had to sit through the service and we weren't allowed to like bring a comic book from home or a novel to read. Like all we had was a Bible. So if the sermon was boring or over our heads, like this was our option. And there were maps in the back of the Bible and that was the only pictures. So I was studying the maps during the service and I found Jericho on a New Testament map. And I was quite sure that I had found a typo in this Bible because I had heard the story of the walls falling down and I couldn't figure out why would this be from the time of Jesus. So after the service, I brought the Pew Bible up to show the pastor and he was shaking hands with everybody at the back, you know, as they filed out of the sanctuary. And I was like, I have a question, you know, like I've got my Bible in front of me. And he goes, okay, just a minute. Let me, you know, take care of these adults. And then so all the adults filed through and then he got down on one knee and he said, okay, what's your question? And I showed him the map of Jericho in the New Testament. He said, you know, I don't know the answer, but I will find out. And that week he went home and did research. Next Sunday, I'm like waiting anxiously through the whole sermon, wondering if he actually found an answer for me. And I went to talk to him after church. And after all the adults filed past, he gets down on one knee and he said, well, I found an answer. I found a big book on Jericho. And I looked up and here's what happened. And he like recounted to me like how Jericho was rebuilt a mile away from the original site. And so the one in the New Testament is not exactly the same as the one in the Old Testament. And I was like, oh, there's an answer.
That's so good.
That like teachability and the refusal to be intimidated by a question that you can't answer.
So good.
Was just beautiful. And it's funny now looking back, like, why do I still remember that? All these years later, you know, 40 years later, I still remember that conversation. Did it have something to do with the fact that I'm now sitting in a room surrounded by Bible reference books?
Totally. Yeah.
Like, is my sense of vocation, was it even sparked in that conversation as I realized, there's a lot we can discover about the Bible and there's books with answers and it's okay to have questions. And here I am.
I love it. That's so such even, a good story.
As pastors and youth pastors, like as you get asked questions, the way you handle those questions can shape someone's trajectory and the way they interact with scripture. And your willingness to not know and to admit that you don't know, but to go help someone find the answers can be really powerful.
Oh, it's so good. Well, and I love when I listen to you, even when you're teaching or even now, you're a part for the church, the way you love the church. I remember saying this to you when we did our first podcast. I just love how much you love the church. I just do.
I love the church.
I can tell. It just comes out of you, the stories, the ways you speak.
Everyone gets to play naturally supernatural. The main and the plain. If you're a Vineyard person, you've been hearing phrases like this for a long time. Some of you have said them from stage. But if someone stopped you in a parking lot and asked you what one of them actually meant, you might need a second. That's not a memory problem. That's just what happens to a movement's language over time. It becomes shorthand. It's how we talk to one another. But you need these phrases not just to be memorable, but to hold weight, to carry meaning and story for you. Heart of the Vineyard is an 8-part video resource to help you with this. It's a series of short talks and conversations with people who know and love the Vineyard and want to help you and your church get stronger. It's coming this fall to vineyardusa.org/grow. Have you ever wished there was a way to help the girls in your church grow in their faith while connecting to generations of women? That's the vision behind Vessels. Vessels is a place for girls in grades 3 through 6 where faith, fun, and biblical truth come together. More like a club than a classroom, it combines engaging Bible teaching, crafts, jewelry, music, and authentic relationships that help girls discover their God-given value, purpose, and identity. At the same time, Vessels creates opportunities for women and girls to build meaningful relationships across generations, strengthening both along the way. Now, my daughters have absolutely loved being a part of Vessels. I've been so impressed by the depth of what they're learning each week. It's helping them build a strong foundation following Jesus, memorizing scriptures, and discovering who God called them to be. Now is the perfect time to explore bringing a club to your church. The Vessels team will be at several regionals this fall, and they'd love to meet you there. Or visit godsvessels.com to learn more and schedule a conversation. That's godsvessels.com. The next generation won't be discipled by accident. Let's be intentional. Do you ever feel just scattered? Whether you're an established church or just starting out, Planning Center helps you connect every ministry and sync every detail. From volunteer schedules and kids check-ins to donations and event signups, then you can feel at ease knowing things are in their right place. Get started for free today at planningcenter.com. The We Are Vineyard podcast is a production from the team at Vineyard USA. If you've been enjoying the podcast, leave us a review on YouTube or the podcast platform of your choice. Connect with us online for additional resources. Our website is vineyardusa.org, and we're on Instagram and Facebook at Vineyard USA. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.